Phil, how you doing today?
Okay, Glenn. Steve, Michael, how are you guys doing?
Good. Well,
nice Thanksgiving weekend.
Yes. Not bad. Not
good.
Bad.
A lot of football.
Good. I take it. I think yours was pretty successful as well.
Well, it was good. Good. It's always good to sweep the Jets, and that was a good win for us. We got good contributions from all three units. A lot of different players. A lot of guys stepped up, made big plays. So that was good.
Can we start with the offensive line? Because that was one thing that a lot of people addressed before the season began. Matt Leiter, of course, retires, so you got to replace him on that side. Brian Waters doesn't come back. You've since had injuries to Mankins. We watched Green Bay last night. Green Bay's offensive line has had major problems here with a lot of injuries in their offensive line and different personnel. Jeff Saturday now in the middle. Why has your offensive line really come together and played so well this year? And did you expect they would be able to play at this level when the season began?
I thought our offensive line's been pretty consistent all year. Of course, we love to have Logan in there, but Donald Thomas has done a great job for us on at both left guard and right guard. Wendy's come through at center and done a really solid job there. And, of course, Nate at left tackle, that's really the position we drafted him for. We used him right tackle last year, and we had Light and also some at tight end. But it was good left tackle. Sebastian's had a real good year. Of course, he wasn't able to play against the Jets, and Marcus did a good job for him, as he did in preseason. So Dan Connolly's done a solid job for us. Nick has stepped in there and played well when he's been called on. So, overall, we've had to move those guys around a little bit, but they do that in practice all the time anyway. And, it's a hard-working group. They work well together. And, of course, they're well-coached. Dante does a great job with that group.
Yeah, we were talking about Dante earlier, and he seems to be the consistent factor there over the years.
What is it about him that that has allowed him to be so – Dante, I'm talking about, that's allowed him to be so successful for so long? I mean, it's amazing the run he's had here.
Well, Dante's obviously very experienced. He's a smart coach. He's very quick to make adjustments and understand what's going on the other side of the ball. Of course, when I was here in '96, he was on the defensive staff with myself, Romeo, and Al Groh. So he has a great appreciation, and he's coached special teams. So he's got a great appreciation for all different aspects of the game. But he's excellent on the offensive line. And he's smart. He demands a lot out of the players. They respond well to his coaching, and he makes them interchangeable. He makes them learn different positions and works different combinations of guys in there. So if we can all play together, that's great. But if we have to shuffle the deck at times, then they're not uncomfortable doing that.
We've talked many years now about how the next guy seems to step up in any number of situations for you, offensively, defensively. Even Castle, a quarterback, filling some tremendously large shoes. To what do you attribute your team's ability for that next guy to be ready?
Well, I think it's just the player's mentality. I think that's what those guys do. They prepare and they know that they can be called on at any time, and everybody's counting on them when that situation does come up. And they do it conscientiously, study and prepare conscientiously. So when that situation presents itself, that they can be there for the team, but also take advantage of the opportunity for themselves and possibly move into that spot. We've had that. You're right. We've had that a lot.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to your comment, sweeping the Jets this year. That's good. That brings your record against the Jets to 19-9. I'm keeping up now since you've been in New England. Pretty good record. I'm one of the few people, maybe the only person in this room who's a...
How could it be? Yeah, 19. Okay, that's right.
19-9.
Yeah, because we played him twice in the playoffs.
All games, yeah. 19-9. Not bad. I think I'm the only person in this room who's a big Tim Tebow fan. Is that safe to say, guys?
I'm a fan of the man. How about the quarterback?
Okay.
I think, yeah, he's a terrific guy. I'm not sure he could be a number one quarterback.
I'm a big Tim Tebow fan. Now it can be told, since you don't have the Jets to worry about this year. In the second game against the Jets, were you preparing for two quarterbacks, or was it clear, based on the way the Jets have played this year, that they weren't going to use Tebow, and therefore you weren't going to devote any practice time to preparing for him?
Well, we prepared for Tim as kind of the role that he's been in, which is the kind of the wildcat role, but also knowing that he could be a play away from being the quarterback. He was the backup quarterback. The third quarterback was inactive, as he's been all year. So Tim was the backup quarterback, but we wouldn't anticipate him to play unless there was an injury. except in their wildcat formations. And he didn't do that, of course, in our game, but he'd done it in all the other games.
I want to ask you about the physicality of the defense right now, because over the last few weeks, it seems like this has become a very physical unit. They're a ball-hawking unit. They're all over the ball. How much of that is by design?
Well, we don't have any control over where the ball goes. I mean, we try to be physical against blockers and be physical tacklers, but when the ball's thrown, particularly to the inside part of the field, it does put more people closer to the ball. And you know, you like to rattle those receivers when they come inside and try to take control of the middle of the field, so they think twice about coming in there. Quarterback maybe thinks twice about throwing it in there. We had some of those big hits earlier in the season, and it's always good to see those, because it sends a message to the opponents that you know, this isn't free real estate in here. That if you come in here, you know, this is our turf, and we want to control it. So love to see that.
Does that make up for stuff? Plus, you can even see it on completed passes. Guys have their hands in on the ball, trying to strip the ball loose. Does that make up a lot of times for things that happen out there on the field?
Well, I mean, I think you always want to play good defense fundamentally in every area. But ultimately, our job is to try to get the ball. And if we can take the ball away from the offense, whether it's the deflections, strip sacks, cause fumbles, interceptions, whatever it may be, then we're always trying to be aware of that. We try to make the players aware of that, and they have an awareness of it. Which guys can we get the ball out on? Which guys don't carry it very tightly? Which quarterbacks can we read? Which routes can we jump? What plays can we take advantage of to try to get the ball? And making the tackles, of course, getting the guy on the ground that has the ball, that's what a defensive player does. But trying to get the ball as part of that play is also you know, an awareness thing. And we, you know, Matt, Patricia, and Pepper, Patrick Graham, Brian Flores, Josh Bohr, the coaches all do a good job of that.
Speaking of physical turnovers, who got credit for that fumble by Sanchez? Was that Vince Wilfork or Moore's ass that actually got credit for that fumble?
You know, it's kind of similar to the play in the first Jet game where Vince hit Slauson kind of on the handoff and then became a safety, and well, Green kicked the ball out. It wasn't on the handoff, but it was that same kind of play where the blocker actually went back into the runner, or in this case the quarterback, so.
That's right.
That's just a bad picture and bad video that'll be played forever.
Yeah, that's not the play you really want to be a part
of. No, Vince says he doesn't mind being part of it.
Oh, yeah. It's like Herm Edwards doesn't mind being part of the Joe Pisarcik fumble.
Exactly. Right.
Right. We have all kinds of stats about coaches and teams in December, who does well in December, who doesn't. You think there's a mental aspect, particularly in the Northeast, to playing good football in December? You inevitably have bad weather. Some guys don't want to be out there. Some guys don't mind. Do you think that's a mental thing that you have to talk about with teams when you get to this time of the year?
I think you can talk about it a little bit. We're out there in it every day. So whatever we get today, tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, whatever happens to be out there in practice, we'll deal with it. We won't be playing in it this week because we'll be in Miami, but somewhere along the line we'll probably see those type of conditions. So at least we're used to it. But I think a lot of it's a mental frame of mind too. I mean, you can't worry about the elements. You worry about your opponent. You worry about doing your job, and you try to use the elements to your advantage, knowing what the wind is. You know, how it would affect the kicking game, the passing game, and if you play in wet or snowy conditions, how that affects your footing, your ball handling. But still, it really comes down to dealing with the opponent more than the conditions. That's who we really are against, is our opponent. And not getting distracted by the conditions, but being able to focus on what you have to do to defeat them, that requires some concentration and mental toughness.
Would it affect your evaluation of a player if, for example, he played his entire college career? I know this wouldn't happen, but just for example, if he played his entire college career in Southern California or in Miami and had never played in bad weather, or a free agent who's played on the West Coast and has never been in the environment that you're going to be in inevitably in New England?
Yeah, no, I don't really think so. I mean, Gerard Mayo, guys like that. There's plenty of good football players that can make that adjustment. And really, it's just it's an adjustment. I mean, it's not anything that's intolerable. It's just a different. Some guys get used to playing in real warm weather. Other guys get used to playing in cold weather. And really, if you're mentally tough and you just block out the conditions and again focus more on your job and your opponent and what you have to do, then it's really more of a state of mind.
I'm sure you saw the Jim Schwartz throwing the red flag and Mike Smith a few days before that. I got to believe you're aware of the rule, as I'm sure Schwartz was, but in the emotional state he was in, because he's looking at that play, saying, how can he not be down by contact with his knee down? You kind of lose it. First of all, what's your feeling about that rule, since obviously the idea of video replay is to get the call right, and they did not get the call right. And second of all, how do you prevent yourself from getting so pissed off on the sideline that suddenly you go brain dead and you forget the rule and you just throw the red flag out there and cause even a bigger problem for your team?
Well, what I personally do is I usually don't throw the flag early. If anything, it's late to try to make sure, even if I feel pretty sure that I should throw it, I still want to give every opportunity to take a look at the play, because, again, you have to overturn the play. If it's a tie, it's going to go to whatever the original call was. So, you know, you've got to have enough evidence to overturn it. And sometimes what I see and what the camera shot is aren't the same. So you never really know for sure until you can maybe see it, verify the camera shot that the coaches up in the booth see, that type of thing. It's one of the reasons why I carry my flag in my sock as opposed to my pocket, so I don't inadvertently pull it out or it falls out, because once it's on the ground, it's on the ground, and you've thrown it, whether it's intentional or unintentional or by mistake or whatever it is. You know, once you've done it, you've done it. So I usually try to be conservative and throw it until I know that I want to throw it. And there are plenty of times when I'd like to throw it, but I just want to try to get more information, because once you lose that challenge, you really lose two challenges, because you could get as many as three, and if you lose one, then you can't get three. You know, you're down to, you know, you only have one left, or that's your last one, however you want to look at it. So it's big to lose. Like you said, the intent of the rule is to get the play right, and of course they didn't get it right. I think that's one of the things that, you know, in general, I don't think is a great thing with the officiating, is that they let a lot of plays go, and then they, with kind of the idea that, well, if you want to challenge it, go ahead and challenge it. And there's some that seem pretty obvious to what they should be called, but they kind of let those plays run, play themselves out. So it's a philosophy that the league has, and they really, you know, they're the people to take it up with. That's, we saw that a couple of years ago in the Baltimore game. They it was an obvious incompletion. We scooped it up, ran it back for a touchdown. Baltimore challenged it. It was an obvious incompletion, but they had to waste a challenge on it because the officials just didn't want to call it an incomplete pass, which it clearly was. But that's kind of the way the officials officiate, is they let a lot of stuff go. And on the other hand, I would say, you know, from the Detroit standpoint, we had one of those plays in Jacksonville 5 or 6 years ago where Maurice Jones-Drew hit up into the line, spin out. We didn't tag him down. He got up and ran for a touchdown. You know, just tag the guy down. That's all you got to do. You know, you don't have to, you know, all you got to do is just tag him while he's on the ground, and he is down. So,
wouldn't the 15-yard penalty
that's enough
be enough? It seems to me that once you tag on top of that, that it no longer is eligible for a replay, then you really just... to me, it's hurting the game because you're not getting the play right. Would you agree?
I wouldn't disagree. Let's put it that way. But, you know, it's not my job to criticize the rules and all that. That's what, you know, our league and competition committee and all that does. And so, you know, our job is to understand the rules and play by them. But, you know, I certainly think that those things are open and should be open for discussion. And, I mean, again, it goes back to the whole replay thing of not having a camera on the goal line, not having a camera on the sideline, not having a camera on the end line, where those key calls come from, and then you have to wait and hope that the camera happened to have that angle. And we go back to the Denver interception where Bailey caught it, ran it back, Watson hit him, but all the cameras are down there at the other goal line where we were, and the play's 100 yards away, and there's no good angle on the play, but... I don't know how you could look at that play and not think it was a touchback, but there's no evidence to overturn it. So that's part of the problem with challenging a play is you don't know what camera angle you're going to see. I understand it's out in the middle of the field, then okay, you know, was he down, was he not down, was the quarterback's arm going forward, was it not going forward? But scoring plays on the goal line, scoring plays on the sideline and in line, I mean, those are should be easy to get, but they're not. So I mean, it's like tennis. You know, you challenge a play, was the ball in or was the ball out? Well, there's a line. I mean, you know, there's no getting that wrong. Well, we get the same lines in football.
Two more things before we get you out of here. One, Jermaine Cunningham apparently suspended for 4 games for violating this league substance abuse policy. Any comment on Cunningham and his suspension?
No, not really. It's unfortunate, but it's a league. It's a league discipline, so we don't really have any control over it or say in it.
And it's also now time for the coach's question of the week, brought to you by your local Mercedes-Benz dealers. As Bill,
don't get
cheers.
Too excited. Wait till you hear the question.
Their winter Mercedes-Benz dealers and their winter event going on now at your local Mercedes-Benz dealers on the web at mbusa.com. This week's question comes from Lee in Roxbury. Lee in Roxbury notes that you have won your 200th game as a coach, 8th coach in NFL history to do that. Any comment on winning 200 games as a coach? Is that something that you, was that an aspiration of yours when you got into coaching?
No, it was never an aspiration. You know, it's an honor, and I think it speaks, you know, the football's the ultimate team game, so it's, you know, a commentary really on the coaches that I've coached with, assistant coaches, coordinators, and all that. But more importantly, the players. Those are the guys that make the blocks, the tackles, the kicks, the passes, the catches, all the plays that need to be made to win a game are made by the players. I don't do any of that. So when you win games, it's because players make plays to make you win. And that's I've always believed that, and that's the truth. So I've been very fortunate to coach a lot of good players.
Congratulations, win number 200, Coach, and more importantly, an opportunity this weekend to, believe it or not, to wrap up the division. With a win this weekend, you can get that first of your numerous goals that I know these guys want to get. It's pretty amazing.
Right. Well, it'll be tough. We've had trouble with Miami down there in December, and they're a good football team. They're tough, they're physical, and they're healthy. And, you know, that says a lot at this time of year. So I know they're well coached, and that was a big win for them against Seattle. They played well against the Seahawks. So we're going to need a good week of preparation, and we're going to need to play and coach well down there on Sunday. But that's certainly a good opportunity for us. We look forward to it.
And watch out for the sprinklers. I hear when things are not going well, they turn them on.
So we'll take our rain gear.
Be careful. Coach Bill Belichick, right here on the Big Show.
Thanks, Dave, Michael.
Good seeing you.
Thanks, Lynn.